All right, gang, we live. E-Squared, thank you for your patience. I apologize for my tardiness because, I fucked up. But we're going to go ahead and keep it running. You know what I mean? Once again, I'll do a quick introduction to Cigars and Combos live from E-Squared. I got two great gentlemen here with me today. One to my right, Brother John, who is smoking a
Prodermo
champagne, drinking a Red's Hard Apple Ale. And then to my left, Brother Gerard, that's smoking a Cohiba Blue. He was copying off me. I took my label off, drinking the Dogfish 60.
Yes, sir.
We want to thank you guys for tuning in. We want to thank y'all for being patient. I was late. We actually were on another site altogether.
Yep.
Yeah, posted. And it just dawned on me that I might want to do a sound check and make sure. So thank you. Thank you for hopping on board. So tonight, we're going to deviate from... Actually, we're not going to deviate, Gerard. We're going to come back to where we originated from, which is just talking about some serious stuff. The stuff that we normally talk about here in the lounge. Lately, our last few podcasts, we've kind of been on the whimsical side. We've been going real light. Because, you know, with COVID, everything is all serious now. People are afraid. I don't say afraid. Bad word choices.
Yeah.
People are being cautious. You hear all this negativity in the news with COVID and you know, the election and all that. So by design, we were going lighthearted to just have a whimsical view of life. But sometimes I have to go back to our core. And so I got these two dynamic brothers that's here with me tonight. And we want to talk about black men raising black men. What's your thoughts? When you hear that, what's your initial thought about that? I'll start with you.
All right. It's an honor to raise a boy, a black boy. Unfortunately, only 70% of, less than 70% of boys are being raised by their fathers now.
Less than 70%?
Less than 70% as far as 2021. So 30% of the black boys in our country have their father with them. And I'm not even talking about married or just where their father is. That guy. I'm spending time with my father. My father's there. So it's heartbreaking to hear that because, I mean, I look about how my dad, he had an 8th grade education, but he always made sure he was there for me. You know what I mean? He worked hard, but when he had a day off, he was outside throwing a baseball. He was doing some, you know, just talking and spending time. So, you know, I then turned around and did the same with my son, you know.
Gerard, what do you think when you hear that subject, that topic?
The word that comes to mind is impossible, because there's a lot of hurdles that goes on with black men raising black men in these days. You know, with beyond the politics, it goes to how dangerous outside is, how TV negatively influences us about who we are, because we don't necessarily know who we are as black men, and then we need black men to be around to teach black boys what it means to be black boys and black men, and I just don't see enough of it. You know, so that's where I would go with it. I don't see enough of it.
So that's, to piggyback off of where you're coming from, that's kind of sobering, isn't it? That's not supposed to be the norm, is it?
Nah, it's not supposed to be the norm, but it's hard because to be a black man out here, there's almost every element out here that goes against who we are. Like, I believe we're kings. And I believe us being kings, it's hard for us to teach that to our youth, knowing we're being subverted with music, TV, problems out here in society, economics. Everything goes against who we are as people.
Okay.
So
emasculation.
Yes, and definitely that. Definitely emasculation. So I think that it's more important for the men that are out here to do more, to be more, to be more visible. And that's what I try to do every day I live. I try to be more visible to who, no matter whose kid it is. I try to be there so they'll remember what I said to them.
All right, got
who
you.
I am.
So just to qualify a little bit, Gerard, I'm you have a son, right?
Yes.
Okay. John, you got a son, right?
I have a son.
All right. I got two sons as well. So we are fathers. We are black men. And we are, I guess, I don't know about y'all, but I qualify as a grown-ass man.
I qualify.
So I flipped over from kid to young man to man to grown ass man. I'm at grown ass man level right now.
That's what my bills say.
I'm going to assume I got two grown ass men with me. Okay, yeah. So, I mean, we all know the ills. You know, I don't want to dwell excessively on the problems.
Okay.
I wanted this to be a little bit more, like, solution-focused, understanding that we weren't going to solve all the ills of society in 45 minutes.
Right.
But let's go ahead and set a baseline. You guys said it a lot. You know, here in... the United States, I can only speak for what I know. I'm not outside the U.S. You know, I think it's not hyperbole to say the black man and the black youth in the U.S. is I don't want to say endangered species, but
we have a lot more challenges.
At least it feels that way to me.
Yes.
I don't know what it feels like to be a white man or a Hispanic male or any other male other than a black male, but it feels like there's a lot more challenges for me and mine than it is for others. What do you guys, do you guys feel the same way?
Absolutely. I mean, there's no other way to feel. No matter where we go in the workforce, we're the minority. And I don't like to use the word minority. We're the lesser populated individuals. Almost everywhere you go, when you want to have a good time, you have to go amongst your own people. And when you go amongst your own people, that we're even starting to, the numbers are even starting to dwindle in that. So I believe so.
What you think, John?
I believe so too, because I still walk down the street and people of another color grab their bag. And they pop
all that grain in your beard.
All that grain in beard. I got to say, he might have a flashback and get me this time.
Really?
You know what I mean? But it's, I've been on the elevator. And they grab their bag or, you know, turn around, look at me like, I'm like, lady, I'm just trying to get to this, to my floor.
You got an office in this building.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I just, it's discouraging, it's tough. And, you know, my background, I worked at Ferris for a long time, worked in a lockdown facility. So I get to see how just a whole lot of us there and the way we treat it and the way we perceive and things like that. So, I do feel like if we don't do something, we're going to be in the Smithsonian Institute. And they're going to say, what's that? Well, that's a black man. We used to have them.
We used to have them.
They don't exist no more. All
right, so question. I think before when we were testing it, before we hopped on this side, once again, I apologize for our tardiness, but you threw some stats out there. Repeat that back, because I felt that was sobering.
I'm going to say it like this. 70% of the black boys that's being raised right now are being raised without their father.
Being raised, all right.
Without their father.
That's a huge.
That's too big of a number.
Now, when you say without, do you mean in the house or do you mean just not knowing who they?
Not knowing who they are and not around.
True.
We're not even talking about, you know, they're not married, my mom's split, and all that. I'm just not around, and that's proven data. You can look at it right now as far as 2021.
Where'd you get your data from?
I got it off the National Census thing.
Okay.
Yeah, so they do a data tracking. So I'm a data person, so you can always look that up. And 80% of the juvenile facilities have us. We're there. Close to 90 in regards to adult facilities. So we got a problem. So some of that 70% could be because their dad might be incarcerated. Or some other thing, murdered or whatever.
I remember looking up some data for a previous podcast. In 2019, they said 30% of the prison population in the U.S. was black males.
Yes.
Sounds about right.
That's about right.
I've heard something similar to that.
About right.
Yeah.
Well, see, I don't think it necessarily even has to be prison because in my instance, my parents separated when I was 7. They divorced when I was 7. And because of the divorce, my father didn't want anything to do. He had to pay child support. He didn't want anything to do with the family because he had to pay child support. So my father quit his job. And he just decided, you know what? You're going to do it on your own. So there was very little contact. And my father lived less than a mile away from me. So it was very little contact. Now, mind you, when I started running the streets, I didn't necessarily think about how important it was to be around him. Now his mother, my grandmother, she made it a point that every Sunday for me to be over there.
Gotcha.
So she made it a point because she knew how important it was.
Right.
But the problem is now we don't get, in our first stage of adulthood, we don't get our kids to recognize how important it is to be parents. How important it is. So when you have a child, like I had my son when I was 20, my first one, I was 20. My son lived with me from 24 years old to 30. I was 38. Mm-hmm. He lived with me that whole time, at all. So, and I, he only, and the reason why I wanted him to live with me because of what I was missing from my father. Mm-hmm. Because everybody told me how what a great a man my father was, but I couldn't see that because he wasn't around.
Conceptualized.
Yeah, I couldn't see it. So I know what it means to be a father, and I, my first trial run was having my son in the house with me, learning what it meant to be, how important it is to be a parent. I can't really talk to a lot of men about that because they don't know the sacrifice you need to make to be a father. And that is the reason why I'm the way I am when it comes to dealing with children, all children.
I mean, I could say on my own side, like I was a football dad, so I was married, and then me and, you know, their mom, we split. So you had to pay child support and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So I had to move in my, eventually live in my sister's middle room. I would discuss it. I'm open with that. Mm-hmm. But I promised my son I'd be back. Mm-hmm. So about a year and a half later, I was able to move back to Delaware.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I told him, you know, but, you know, I always did my weekends and my extra days mm-hmm. during the week. But I told my son, as a man, you gotta go through this. Because he'd be mm-hmm. like, Dad, why are you going through that? I'm like, you gotta go through this, John. Yeah. This will help you. This will mm-hmm. help me grow, help you grow. Mm-hmm. But what happens, like you said, is, and what men gotta get off that. You don't divorce the family.
Yeah.
You don't divorce your son and your daughter. Mm-hmm. The divorce happened between you and the mom, okay.
Mm-hmm.
But men get angry and walk away from everybody. And that's the part we gotta stop doing. Child support is responsibility anyway.
Yeah.
You gotta do something. Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't like it. The man said, Mr. Cameron, push your check up. And they did the calculation.
I think we all, did they pull the drawer out? Did you ain't see the calculation? You ain't see the chart, did you?
See, because it was going advanced.
Oh, I didn't see a chart. I'm a little older than y'all. I didn't see no chart.
In Delaware, she did it on the streamline. She did it on the
computer.
She said, Mr. Cameron, bring your checks out. I need 2 weeks back to back.
Yep.
Never give me three. Mm-hmm. Push them things up. Mm-hmm. Did the calculations. She printed out. This is what you're going to pay me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when they get upset and angry. Mm-hmm. But because... And we got to change that.
You leaving one point out.
What's that?
When they show you the formula, yeah. And they go, this is her, this is you, this is how much you want to pay me. If you don't like it, yeah. We can go to trial.
Yep.
And then nine times out of ten, when you go to trial, it's going to be $50, $60 more when you go for yep. wasting the court's time. So it's going to be a little more.
That part, men take it being, they get angry and feel like they're being disrespected.
Uh-huh.
And then that's when they walk away from everybody. Mm-hmm. And they don't realize that, yo, your son's still there, your daughter's still there, they need you. You know what I mean? I made a point. I was like, I don't care. And my child support was heavy at one point, so I always put $60 away until I got paid. So when I saw my kids, at least I had $60 to $70 to go out and have food and get them something to eat and things like that.
I was the same way. When they hit me with that formula and told me how much I was going to pay, I was like, this is not going to work for me. And after about 4 years, I was like, you know what? I'm doing the same thing my dad did.
Gotcha.
And at 24, I was like, I can't take that, continue the cycle.
Right.
You got to break the cycle somehow.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. But mine was a little different. I was down there with my oldest son. Shout out to Omar, I love you. And, I bought my pay stubs, and she pulled out some little thing on the drawer. You know how the kid, they used to have the old desk had the thing for the teachers to write with. It had some chest something on there. And then she just wrote it on a piece of paper, handed it to me. He was like, yeah, that's where you at. And I was like, huh? Like, what? Yeah, that's where you at.
Yeah.
You know, that's your number based upon what you brought up here. Yeah. So, yeah, so I guess it's, be it right or wrong,
right.
The child support issue, and I think it's mostly wrong, because, listen, I have two sons.
Absolutely.
I paid child support for both of my sons. I was a resentful child support dad for both of them. I'm not going to lie.
Well, I paid it,
you know what I mean? I think that does... probably wrong, but it probably does drive a wedge sometimes because, you know, we being taxed on top of being taxed, mm-hmm. on top of being taxed, on top of being taxed.
Do you think that anything that white America does downtown in the courthouses are to unite black people? There's nothing going on down at the courthouse to unite black people. Nothing.
No, but you know, so let me ask you a question. So we'll go back. I want to touch on some of the ills, right? We mm-hmm. know. All right, from birth, you're born a minority, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to use talk about myself a little bit. So you born in the inner city. I was born in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. inner city Philly. You're a Philly guy, right? Mm-hmm. You're a Wilmington guy.
Yep.
Is it safe to say you was born in the inner city mm-hmm. part of Wilmington?
Mm-hmm.
So our schools, is it safe to say that our schools probably were not on par with maybe some suburban schools or definitely not private school? What they should be on par with a private school was people paying to send their kids. But do you felt like your school was on par with some of the suburban schools and maybe some more affluent districts?
Well, at the time, we didn't know because I didn't know anything about the suburbs. I thought we were rich.
Gotcha.
So I didn't know anything about the suburbs. But as far as me knowing now, what I know now, I know absolutely not. Not even close.
Yeah.
I got my kids now. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
My son is 26 years old right now.
Mm-hmm.
I can ask him a question and he will say something but will not answer my question because he hasn't heard the question.
Mm.
He just heard a couple of words and he just spat out whatever came out of, across his monitor out of his mouth. So that comes from learning and critical thinking. My son doesn't have it. He doesn't have it.
I can say in my part, definitely, you know, Brooke was a great school. But I remember taking my first English class in college and the lady didn't even mark my paper. She said, I just need to talk to you.
Mm.
She said, the structure's off. You're writing the way you talk. And I got me a tutor. I was playing football at the time, so she got me a tutor. But I will say it was some stuff that was lacking.
So you was already in college?
I was in college, taking my first English class. And she, it wasn't no red pen, no nothing. She just said, I just need to talk to you. And she was cool about it, so she said, just come talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her where I went to school at. She was like, listen, you got this. She said, but there's some stuff you're missing. If you want to stay in college, you're going to have to learn these skills.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? So, you know, she helped me and I learned the skills. But, yeah, you know, like you said, as a minority, we're a little behind in that area.
Well, my experience was like the similar. You don't know at 6 years
absolutely.
Old
right.
that the local school that you go
right.
to is probably not on par with
absolutely.
Some of the other schools. But I will say that, at least shout out to James Rhodes Elementary
James
School.
James Rhodes.
I think third grade or fourth grade or fifth grade or sometime, they used to bus us to this other school for computer classes.
Because
we didn't have computers in our school. So it wasn't everybody. It was, you know, when I was young, I was relatively smart. The older I got, the dumber I got. So let me just say that.
Me too.
But when I was young, I was considered,
didn't keep up with the criteria.
I was considered one of the elite kids. How about that? Mm-hmm. But the older I got, the dumber I got. So it was like six or seven of us on Thursdays. They would put us on a school bus, take us all the way out to some other school in the white district where we would go into this classroom and they would teach us computer. We would call the modem and put it on the thing. Mm-hmm. And it was just the green dots on the screen.
Gotcha.
So, you know, I didn't know. But all right, so we're in inferior schools.
Yes.
Right.
True story.
Okay.
Right. True story.
We are probably, and I grew up in, I was blessed. Like, I had both my parents. I grew up in a traditional household with a mom and dad that worked and grandmom lived with us, so it was always somebody at the house.
Great
even
beer.
When parents wasn't there. And, you know, she ruled with a wooden ruler.
Yeah.
You know, back then she would whip your ass with that ruler if you got too loud when the stories was on.
Yes, sir.
So I grew up in a traditional household. I had everything that I needed in order to be successful in life.
Mm-hmm.
I still deviated.
Yeah.
The streets still got me.
That's understandable.
I ran to the streets with open arms, and they swallowed me up. And for a period of time, you know, it's been a little dicey. Going back to, I got a thing from Ms. Jackson. She says, her father's daughter left like he didn't need to give her any money because she made more money. I wish men would understand you should never have the white man step in to tell you to support the child you made. So I'll take this one. We don't want the white man to step in.
Yeah.
He steps in. So in the case of my first son, his mom, let me go back. I was a 16-year-old dad.
Mm-hmm.
His mom was 16-year-old. So we're 16-year-old parents.
So you had no idea.
I went through school.
To
I went away to college.
Mm-hmm.
She went to college on the system.
Yeah.
Well, if you in the system and you receiving state aid,
mm-hmm.
the only way to get your aid
is through the child support.
The state initiates that child support
and then comes
thing
for you. Yep.
Right. It comes looking for me.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't that I was being negligent or didn't want to support my son, it was, the way I looked at it, that's part of resentment, which was like, get a job like I'm getting a job. And then I won't have the state taxing me. But, you know, I don't want to go too far. But I will say, with all respect, and thank you for your frank comment. Please, guys, we got a few people on here. We love the comments. This feeds off of y'all, because if not, I'll get tongue-tied and we'll be way off track. But at least for me, the state, and actually, both my sons, the state stepped in and said, this is what you had to pay. And in the case of, even though I was making the payments, the state of Pennsylvania did a new rule. Even though you wasn't behind, they start taking it off the top. It was a state rule. SD, I used to cut that check for so long, SDCUA or something. Oof, I don't even know. It was just the SDCUA. But the state of Pennsylvania would step in, you know, and just take it off the top. What about you guys? Was this, was it that the mom went down, or was it the state kind
of? It was more of anger. The mom went down. And but I had already said, like, listen, we still got to take care of our kid.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, it wasn't, no, the marriage was over. It still had kids.
Right.
So, you know, so she went down there, you know, and that made me angry, but I was like, I still want to take care of my kid. I paid so much out, so I got a refund with my son. Literally, not, this is my, on my fraternity shit. I got a refund from child support.
I couldn't be that lucky.
You know?
They get a refund?
And then, when I dropped off with my son, and I just had my daughter, I paid an extra $100 just for my daughter to get her hair done and things like that that she needed, separate. You know?
Well, I always say, I paid a combined 36 years worth of child support. Yeah. I have two boys, and I paid for them from birth to 18, there was a little bit of overlap. Now that I am the age and I'm looking back and looking at how the fine young men that my sons have become, despite the resentment and anger that that support caused, it was the best money I ever spent.
I see that too.
It was the best money I ever spent.
John's in school in Arizona, graduating in a month. Jayla's at Bethune-Cookman. Got a 3.2 GPA of first semester. I'm happy. That's the best investment I ever had.
That's a success story.
I ain't mad. All right.
So inferior education.
True story.
Lack of resources.
Always.
Inner city challenges. What were some of the inner city challenges you faced coming up as a young man?
Mine was basically friends because I was the first one out of all my friends you see there. I was the first one with a child.
Okay.
And my son, when I had my son, I had to make sacrifices that I wasn't ready to make. The benefit of my having a child at such an early age was my mother was a daycare provider. So I could always leave my son with my mother.
Okay, gotcha.
And I could still run down the streets and do whatever until I was ready to start making the sacrifice to be a father. So I had that with me, but I started making sacrifice when child support started to get outrageous.
Gotcha.
And I'll give you a quick short story. I think I was probably 2 years into, my son was about two, and I went to court for child support for the very first time, blindsided, because I had no idea what was going on. Just got the papers, and I had to show up. I was making $26,000 a year. They told me I had to pay $333 a month. Of course, I'm like, nah, this ain't gonna cut it. I'm not gonna be able to do nothing with $333. Probably 6 months later, I went back to court. It turned into $462. I fought it, it went back to $462. I'm like, damn, I should have stuck with the $333. So I went back another year later and turned into $515, I want to say. And that was like, all right, it's time to get a lawyer, time to fight this, because this can't be right. I can't be making $28,000 a year paying $515 a month. And I can't go nowhere. I got to stay with my mom. So I can't live like this. Went and got a lawyer, basically got custody of my son. And that's how he started living with me from 24 all the way up to 14 years later. That was the story of me. So yes, was I resentful? Absolutely. And the reason being, I had a good support system with those you see there that was like, okay, well, this is what we probably need to do. So a lot of times when it comes to men being in their mid-20s and they have children, they go the route their friends take them. You learn a lot more as a black man when you're up and down those streets than you do from any textbook, from any parent, from any schooling, music, TV. You learn more from your friends. So your friends are the most important influence in your life. Because if I didn't have those kind of friends, I probably would be as resentful, deadbeat dad, all of those things that you hear about the typical black man.
Right.
I probably fall into the stereotype.
Okay. All right, so I don't want to make this about the child support, right, there's a lot more things, but we talked about that, definitely. You know, lack of resources, education, the inner city. Mm-hmm. More along the inner city, what challenges did you have as a child? I'm talking about you growing up in the inner city.
The challenges I had was because I lived in an area of Philadelphia that people thought that people were rich. And they thought that I lived in an area of West Philly called Winfield.
Yeah, Winfield people was rich. That was the West Philly suburbs.
So what they thought was that we had money. Mm-hmm. But there was, the violence was heavy. The shooting and the killing was heavy.
Oh, y'all Jamaican drug dealers went to Winfield.
I remember, I could tell people, I first saw something like a kill. I was 11.
The first time I bought a pound of weed, my cop was in Winfield.
Yeah, so there was a lot of bad perceptions.
Was in Winfield.
So, like, when I go over the bridge.
I'm sorry, too much.
The Brook, the school, there was always, there was dissension because the guys with 60th Street thought we had more than what we really did. Just had a bigger mortgage. My dad, he was 8th grade education, but he worked 2 full-time jobs.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So he bought his house, but the same drama was there. So I wouldn't say just the violence was there. You know what I mean? It was heavy. So that was my biggest obstacle.
Well, for me, in retrospect, I look back, my biggest obstacle was me. And like I said, I came up in a traditional household. I had all the support, but the streets was sexy and enticing to me. Mm-hmm. You know, going to school and getting good grades and having a good education was, you talked about that earlier, was the media portrays us. It wasn't cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It wasn't, you wasn't tough. Being a gangster or a hustler
that
or a dope boy, having the best gear. My parents bought me the best gear, right? Mm-hmm. I had shell top Adidas and patent leathers and all the Jordache jeans, you know, I'm dating myself. Jordache jeans used to be really the hottest jeans back in the day.
I remember begging my mom for a pair.
Yeah, parents bought it for me, but you know, it was just something about being in the streets, doing the things that the streets,
it was intriguing.
You know, streets did that just was exciting and enticing to me. And you know, I ran away from the base in order to get swallowed up by the whale, so to speak. Yeah. So we know that the streets are an issue, right? We know, as you just said, you worked at Ferris. Mm-hmm. And we had, shout out to our people, we have a lot of guys that work over at the Juvenile Detention Center that are members here. We hear the stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got some brothers that are in the penal system that are members here, so we hear the stories all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my son, my oldest son, actually, you know, was awarded a state at the age of 17.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know, he went to the place that's now closed down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want them to sue me.
Right. I know that place.
Where they was beating the kids up. Yeah. He was a resident there for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we know the problems, and then now you got, you know, we can't drive. Right?
Mm-hmm.
We can't jog in the park or jog down the neighborhood, right? We can't take pictures of birds.
Mm.
Right?
Only race.
We can't legally conceal, carry, and disclose.
Mm-hmm.
Nope.
We can't get M&Ms and walk down the street with our hoodies on.
If we are driving, we can't have air fresheners hanging from our mirror.
We can't have air fresheners hanging from our mirrors if we're driving.
Relatively recent.
Yeah, you know, so, and the list goes on and on and on. And once again, I don't want to make this a political thing. We're talking about the reality of our situations as black men here in America. But how does that make you feel? Do you feel like you got a target on your back?
Yeah, for the most part. Especially even at my job. And I work at a trust company, but every day I walk in, I feel as though I have to be the best. I have to be the better than I was yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Every day I walk inside of the work, so I have to make sure all of my I's are dotted. I have to make sure, because something I probably said 6 months ago wasn't right 6 months later.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to make sure whenever I send an email, whenever I speak to a director, I have to make sure I know exactly what I'm talking about. So I have to do homework at work.
Mm.
Before any meeting I have to make sure I go over all the numbers. I have all the papers. Make sure everybody has everything they need before we have meetings with directors. Mm-hmm. I have to do that. That's how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to touch back on what you were talking about earlier about one of our biggest distractions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you said the streets and you said, you know, neighborhood. for what I see about young black men is sacrifice. A lot of us don't know the definition of sacrifice when we have these kids at 16, 17, 21 years old. I didn't know the definition of sacrifice. Mm-hmm. I still wanted to play basketball every day. Mm-hmm. We played Tecmo Bowl until 3 o'clock in the morning most of the times in my house.
Oh, yeah. Tecmo Bowl got it in.
But once again, it comes with sacrifice because a lot of our mothers carry these kids for 9 months, so they get introduced to sacrifice at conception.
Good point.
We don't get that. We don't realize what sacrifice is. Some of us don't realize until we get them child support papers what sacrifice is. Some of us don't realize until something happens. Something extraordinary has to happen for us to recognize the definition of sacrifice. And I'm one of them, whereas though, when my son was brought to me when he was 4 years old, that taught me the definition of sacrifice.
Gotcha.
Because there was nothing my mom could say all the way up until the first 24 years of my life to teach me what sacrifice meant.
That's
until he
point.
Was on my doorstep. I had to wake up in the morning, get him ready for school. It was like, dang, this is what it is. This is parenting. This is, so we need to realize that a lot of us not being parents because we run away from the definition of sacrifice.
I remember going to get some shells with my dad, and I was sitting there putting the sneaks on, and my dad was in the car with me, and he had like his foot up, like, you know, just kind of sitting back. And he had holes at the bottom of the shoes. So after I got the sneaks, I said, "Dad, you got holes in the shoes." He said, "But I'm sacrificing for you, John." So I was like, this is what manhood is about. I don't know if I want to, but it just brought me back to what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
Like the real sacrifice that men have to really, really take for their kids. So we can experience the same thing. The woman felt that sacrifice of going through the 9 months and then finally conception.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think a lot, what happens is this, and I'm going to twist it a little bit. A lot of these boys, because their dad's not around, they get kind of baby-fied.
Oh, yes.
And then they don't want to sacrifice. Because like I said, I've been lucky. I've been working in education and I've been working in mental health.
Mm-hmm.
I get a whole bunch of, "Mr. Cameron, he won't listen to me.
Mm-hmm.
He don't come home. He's smoking in the room. I can't do nothing with him.
He's playing the video games
mm-hmm. all night. I can't get him to come to school." And I'm not blaming the mom, but the boys are not learning that sacrifice.
Absolutely.
And that other piece of, you gotta be responsible younger. Plus, the other thing, Omar, I know we all running the same age group. You did a lot of sacrifices by going out and shoveling in the snow and doing other things to make money.
Oh yeah, yeah. So work ethic was
work
there.
Ethic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the work ethic piece has been watered down too, because now I can take this phone and I can become Instagram famous, and if I get so many likes and followers, I can get rich. But I remember going to Mr. Cullis' house and getting $15 for shoveling.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So let me ask you a question. So I'm gonna go to, do you think the challenges that we're facing, do you think is, and I have this discussion all the time,
mm-hmm.
so there's no right or wrong, but mm-hmm. it's for the sake of discussion, do you think it's systematic? Do you think there's a system in place that's designed here in the U.S. to create more roadblocks or more challenges for men of color?
Absolutely.
I'm talking boys.
Yeah.
We've been spending a lot of time talking about us.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we're talking about us because we were boys before we became men. Shout out to Boys to Men. But do you think this is systematic? Because some people say it's systematic. You have this side that says it's systematic in nature.
Mm-hmm.
The system is set up against us. And then you have the other side that says it's personal responsibility.
That's easy to say.
You know, and that, you know, we are where we are because of bad choices and personal responsibility or personal irresponsibility more than the system is set up against us. So what side of the fence do you fall on? I'll let you go first.
I'm really leaning towards systematic because, like I said, I'm in the data. 49% of our black boys are immediately put in a special ed.
And so, can I pause right there and ask you a question? Who puts us in special ed? Who determines, and I know the answer to this, I'm a reader, so my head is full of useless information, so I want to see if I'm reading the same thing. Who determines nowadays, more than anybody else, whether a kid has ADHD?
The school system and the testing.
The teachers are mostly what?
They don't look like us.
They don't look like us. Thank you. Okay. Don't look like
us. But those who make the criteria definitely don't look like us.
And the ones who break the curriculum don't look like us. And the ones who break the testing don't look like us.
Mm-hmm.
So if Johnny don't get proficient, there's something wrong with Johnny. Y'all gotta put him in another class and dummy him down. Maybe Johnny has a different learning style.
Johnny needs some medication, doesn't he?
Like I I'm a visual learner.
Mm-hmm.
And people are gonna say, "What's the good?" I learn by what I see. Some people learn by what they hear. Johnny might, if the teacher's talking to Johnny, Johnny might not be taking it in. But the teacher go on the board and say, "This is how you break this math problem down," and Johnny's visual, then Johnny gonna catch it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not giving us an opportunity, our boys a chance to find out what their learning curve is.
Mm-hmm.
So then now they stuck in special ed. Now they get comfortable because they're getting, because no child left behind.
Yeah.
So, you know, I popped my son one day. He said, "Dad, I got a 504 plan. I ain't getting, like, I'm not flunking." Mm-hmm. I'm like, "Crap, stolen." Stolen.
You know that's child abuse nowadays.
I know, but he's 26 now, so okay. I'm good. But the thing is that, because, and then they learn the system, so the thing is that, now I'm getting pushed along, getting pushed along, and then I'm in 12th grade, and I can't do nothing.
You can't write or read cursive.
Nope.
Systematic or just bad life choices.
I think it's a system. I think it's systematic that results in a lot of bad life choices.
Mm-hmm.
I think the system comes in first.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you, like the parents that are having these young children, because mind you, a lot of us in our environments are having young kids. We're babies ourselves having children. I think it's systematic because you can't be a child raising a child. How are you going to teach that child if you don't know sacrifice?
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know what the world has to offer? You don't know what you're eligible to do out here. So, and I'm a great example of it because I have a 20-year-old daughter. She's 21 now, but she just had a child.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her that she told me she was ready. At 19 or 20, she told me she was ready. I was like, "You're not ready." She's like, "Yeah, I'm ready. I'm like, "You don't know half of what you think you need to know." Now the baby's here. They were together for 4 months, and now they're separated.
So the cycle starts all over again.
All over again. And now with all the knowledge that I have, me and her mother has, now we're better equipped to help with the situation,
mm-hmm.
to make sure that kid doesn't continue the cycle. But we still have to raise her. Because it doesn't stop just because she's 21.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Because she probably knows a quarter of things she needs to know to be successful out here.
Yeah.
So it's systematic for the most part.
All right, so I'm going to go to the comments real fast. Ms. Jackson, thank you. You are number one commenter right now. She says, once again, she works in the correctional system, and it's hard out there. She sees it day in and day out. She also says you have the young boys who feel they have to hit the streets to survive and help the family, take care of the family, and that's part of it, you know. But we could delve into that a little bit longer. And then I got Carla Jackson says she thinks it's a combination. So I'm gonna throw out my case. And it's funny because me and this is my brother. Like it's mm-hmm. it's funny how when I say brother is more not by blood but by relation. Like we grew up 40 year same neighborhood. I have this belief system. He has mm-hmm. this belief system, and we debated all the time. And I don't think either one of us is right or wrong. But he's more on the line of, you know, personal responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And why I agree with personal responsibility, I'm a visual learner too, so I always like to say this. Like, a free-range chicken thinks he's free.
Yeah.
Mm, good point.
Mm-hmm.
So he has a decision to run around. He's got a, I don't know, he's got, let's just say he's got an acre because he's a free-range chicken.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a fence. But he feels that he's better off than the chicken that's being raised in a cage.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, they both want to wind up on somebody's table.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Yep.
So, you know, I'm a believer that when you look at the statistics,
yeah.
you know, we talk about that, you know, your poverty level is higher, unemployment so, for minorities. And I'm going to stop saying minorities because minorities bring in a big group.
I just hate that word.
And it softens it up. Minority softens it up. You know what
minor,
I mean?
I am not minor to anything.
Right. So it's unemployment rate is higher for blacks.
For blacks.
Mm-hmm. Even if you are employed, your rate of pay is lower for blacks. Our incarceration rate is higher. If a black man and a non-black man go into in front of the judge for the same issues, the black man always gets the higher, longer sentence.
It's a greater chance.
So and it just goes on and on and on and on. So we once again, we know kind of the problems. And then in today's society, the new dynamic over the past 20 years has come in. And this is the big one right here that we haven't even touched on because we didn't have to deal with this. But the new dynamic now is social media.
Mind control.
Social media.
Mind control.
It used to be back with us, the mind control was the music, the rap, right?
They played video games, we still went outside a lot.
Yeah, but the rapper, when you look at rap music, right, the messaging we get, when once again, I'm dating myself, my first rap song was Rappers Delight, Sugar Hill Gang, so I was in middle school when that came out. Of course. But, you know, it was about partying bullshit.
Yep.
And then the rap turned into, you know, Public Enemy, Conscious Rap, BDP, you know, Eric B and Rakim, all those guys. And then you know, Biggie and them came along and it went to glamorizing the drug dealer. N.W.A. came along, fuck the police, and it glamorized just being non-compliant of everybody and everything.
Which is still going on today, which is the biggest messaging today with our children, whereas though they don't have to be compliant to anything, they don't have to have any structure in what they do, they can just be a millionaire overnight. Most of our kids think that just because what's being replaced now with in our child's kids mental is likes is the new love.
Say it one more time for the people in the back.
Likes have become the new love.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So now you fiend for likes. You fiend for people to accept your point of view right now. And that is not fostering our kids mentally. They're not developing mentally because of the likes being mistaken for love. Most of the kids I hear now say they love you. They love you. It's like, I know you don't love. Because if you love me, your actions will show that, not your mouth. So just because you got a bunch of likes, you think that you're loved.
Right.
That's not love.
Okay. So we got all these things, right? Which, once again, I think systematic, you know, is the deck is stacked against us, but still I rise, right? Still I'm a grown-ass black man. I've gotten through the turmoil of my early 20s. I've been incarcerated. I've been locked up. Well, let me clarify. I've been locked up. I never did no hard time. I ain't built for hard time. God bless. Shout out to the brothers who are built for hard time. I'm not built for hard time.
I like ice cream.
But I was able to get through that. You know, I got married. I had my boys as a single parent. I mean, I wasn't married. And shout out to their mothers because both my boys, I'm very proud of them. They're both grown. They're both married. They're both being fathers to their children. You know, I got married. I had my family. And I rose through corporate America, relatively worked my ass off, but was able to make a decent living, and here I am, broke, busted, and disgusted. But so we know all the ills, right?
Yes, true story. Yes.
Let's transition. Let's pivot. So what's the solution? What do you do now with these young kids? Chris says he's not here, but this started. Chris said when I was talking to him about this, he said the young kids got fucked up old heads now.
That's true.
That's his phrase.
That's true.
Which there was no, even if there is not a man in the house, there wasn't an old head or being an uncle or grandparent. And old head wasn't just the guy on the block. That uncle or grandparent or something.
It was
the wise man that could mentor the kid and be like, you being a knucklehead, you know what I mean? This is, you too far off the base.
A lot of people might.
What's the solution there?
Well, a lot of guys our age, especially my age, guys I grew up with, they're friends with these young kids now. We can't be friends. We have to be the base of knowledge to be able to share with them, to tell them this is what's about to happen. And half of them are scared to tell these kids what's right or wrong, whatever the case. But I think it all starts with your support system. It all starts with your friends. It all starts with, if you're surrounded by a good group of people, you can make something out of nothing. You can make something. I'm going to stick on this word. The word is sacrifice. Men, you shouldn't expect anything to be fair. there's nothing in this world that's going to be fair. If you know anything about this world, you know anything about being black, you know the word fair is not in your vocabulary. You have to be willing to sacrifice for someone else to be a better, to have a better day, to move forward, to progress. You have to be able to sacrifice. I sacrifice every day of my life, every day, and I think that I live better for it. You know, I might get a pair of socks for Christmas, but I know I've done so much more for so many more people because I can, because people will trust me to give them the right answer. It's sacrifice. That's what it is. That's the way we go. Sacrifice. Knowledge is sacrifice.
What's the solution, John?
We got to convince our young men that they are princes and they'll be kings. And we got to teach them some skills to be leaders. We got to show them, we got to not talk about it, we got to show them what a leader looks like. And that goes to educating them, spending time with them, disciplining them with love. You know, anytime I pop my son, you know, I always told him, Johnny, you know, I love you, but you just can't do this. You can't do this in my house. And we got to go back to that instead of going and negotiating. We got discipline and love, and we got to teach our boys how to be leaders and how to persevere hardship like a good soldier. You got to be able to do that. And that's what we, you know, and what that takes is us, number one, checking our own self. Because a lot of us are damaged men. And we ain't worked on our stuff, as I call it. You got to find out what's your issue is. Is it drugs? Is it alcohol? Is it depression? Is it anxiety? Go get some help with that. Show your son, you know, this is what I used to be.
Yes.
But this is who I am now. As long as you got breath to live, you can go forth. But we got to go in, grab these boys from the streets and get a handle of them. Because right now, if the way things go in Philadelphia, we're going to be the first city to lose 500 black males this year to murder.
Gotta make a difference. That's definitely a big thing. Here, I'm gonna add one to what you just said too. Men, you have to make a wise sexual choice.
Okay.
I'm gonna leave it there. Okay. Take it wherever you wanna take it.
You have to
make a wise sexual choice.
Gotcha.
There's nothing wrong with saying no.
How about that?
Good. All right, so Carla Jackson said there is no village now. Lorette Bradley says, and even if they do have elders in the home, they don't respect them. You know, I'm going to go back and just say, and I'm going to once again use my own experience. It starts at the cradle. It starts with, in my belief system, based upon my experience, it starts with a two-parent household. If you have a mom and a dad in your household, and they're, even if we don't have to be affluent, you can have a good work ethic. But I think the morals and values, they start in the house. You know, so even when I strayed to the streets and I had that time where I was, you know, wilding, I had a base to come back to. But if you don't have that base starting in the household, then you don't have a base to come back to.
There's a lot of trauma in the house right now.
You know, so I think that the death of the black family is one of the critical things that started. That was the first pebble that created a wave.
The separation.
That's now, right, the separation. Because we talk about black men. So, you know, and so now you have a lot of these young boys that haven't grown to be men yet that are being raised by single parents, you know, and the single parent mom is doing her absolute best.
She's doing her
Shout
job.
Out to the single parent. Right. Listen, I got four sisters. Hold on, I got four sisters and two of my sisters raised their kids without a man, and my nieces and nephews turned out well. You know what I'm saying? But I think the first thing is repairing the family. So when kids come in, they got a mom and they got a dad. And so they have the good moral, they have the good base.
True.
The base could be, is multifaceted. It's too much to talk about in 15 minutes. But they got a good base, right?
Kids respond better when they see love.
Listen,
if they don't see love in the house, then they're not going to be able to display love when they get out the house. So they have to see the family together to be able to recognize what love looks like.
Okay. I met with my daughter and her mom and my son, and we met, and I told them, no matter what, we still family. I'm married. I have another young daughter. But I tell her we still family, because when it's time for development and being there for our kids, we still family.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I want my son to see that, not me bashing his mom or calling his mom names, but like, yo, we still family. If your mom got a problem with you, we gonna all got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And we got to get back to, and we got to. And if things don't work out, don't be so angry as men.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be so angry, because I know what my faults was, and I ain't gonna go into it, but I know what my faults was
absolutely.
When it ended.
Mm-hmm.
And hold yourself accountable.
Mm-hmm.
Wipe your face, hold yourself accountable.
Yeah, get back up.
And raise your kids.
Absolutely. All right, so I got a question then.
What?
This is gonna be touchy, but we gotta talk about it, because we're talking about it, right? Can a woman raise a man?
To a
single mom, can she raise a man?
Successfully? There are no absolutes in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't say absolutely no, but if we want to play percentages, I would say that it's a better chance if she does, the child will have a better chance if she doesn't do it solo.
Okay.
But there are no absolutes in the world. So no one should ever speak of never, always, all the time. Those words don't exist at all. So we need to stop saying those. So yes, a woman can do it. But the better chances of that kid being successful is if there's love in that house.
Cam.
Okay. I'm going to say this. 40% of the black men that's in jail are in there with fatherless. I ain't blaming the mom. I'm saying it's fine. But like you said, if you work together as a unit, you're going to get a higher success. The probability of him staying out of jail and going the right way,
mm-hmm.
is going to be high.
Mm-hmm.
Women do a phenomenal job. I watch my sister lose everything, go back to my dad's house, go to grad school, take care of my nephew, and do major things. He's going to get his doctorate.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, exception to rule. But I think it works better if the mom and dad can sit down and act like humans,
mm-hmm.
and say, listen, let's raise our child.
And I'm going to tell you, I didn't always agree with that.
And I didn't either.
I didn't always agree with that. But it took me to about 30, and I was like, you know what, doesn't do me any good to, you know, expect anything from his mother or whatever the case. And any mother, of my kids' mothers, I'll do the best I can do.
Yeah. And that's
all that came down. I'm going to do the best I can do.
And at the end of the day, I'll just like, do the best that you can do as the parent, mm-hmm. to develop your child. If you see some disabilities in the child, get some early interventions for the child. Don't ignore it. Don't ignore your child. And what's going on now is parents, mom and dads, are focusing too much on the phone and what they're going on in their life, and the kids is ready to do what they want. I'm in education, mm-hmm. so I see it all the time.
Yeah, I agree.
And I'm in therapy, and I got third clients, and so I always like to brief with the mom before I see my kid. And the first thing, I tune in, the kid looking at me in my face, like, where your mom? Oh, she on the phone. Not knocking. We got to stay in. And I tell the mom, we a team. Mm-hmm. If you bring me in, I'm your teammate.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Energy is transferable. Yep. It never dies. I believe it goes from one person to the next. So the energy that you give off is the energy you're going to receive.
Yep.
And if you receive bad energy, you're in a bad place.
Yep.
You should remove yourself from that place if you get bad energy. I think that we don't transfer that good energy enough to our kids as black men, because we control the environment in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Any room I walk in, or any black men or my friends that I walk in, we control that energy in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter what room I'm in. The room is going to have to conform to a black man when he walks in the room.
A strong mm-hmm. black man. If not, a weak black man will conform to the energy in the room.
Black man, black male, two different things.
True.
So be mindful.
Right. So Ms. Bradley says a single mother can successfully raise a boy.
If she does so with the influence,
we did not say that.
I know. I'm just saying. She says so with the influence. If they do so with the influence of other black men, i.e., the village. You know. Okay. So I just thought about this. So. We coming up on the hour, and I apologize, because like I didn't even touch like on a tenth of the things I wanted to touch on. Maybe I was too ambitious trying
time.
To squeeze this into an hour. Nah, one thing I've learned is that you
not
lose your audience after an hour.
We do a part two.
So, yeah, we lose your audience after an hour. So thank everybody for sticking in with us that's with us right now. We're going to come to the wrap up for this, and I actually want to come back and do another one with moms, you know, women raising women, you know. but so I'm gonna stick to where we are now. So
I'm a plug one. I'm a plug.
Go ahead.
May 1st, I'm going to be on a podcast, Motherless Moments, down in D.C., and we're going to be talking about the exact opposite of what Omar was just speaking about on May 1st, Motherless Moments. Look it up.
All right, got you. I'll make sure I log into that, yes. Throw my support.
Mm-hmm.
So we know the problems, multifaceted. There is not one single solution,
no, it's a lot.
Right? But what do you think? What do you think? I'm going to start with you and come back to you. What do you think is one of the biggest? We talked about the family, right? Mm-hmm. Coming up in a I was great messed up. You know what? No. I'm going to speak my mind, right? And then we could debate it. I was going to say being raised in a traditional family mm-hmm. is one of the best precursors to a successful life. Is that still the case now? Because there are a lot of non-traditional families now. Mm-hmm. Do you guys feel that, and if you don't want to comment on it, I understand, but do you feel that a traditional family is key or non-traditional if it's loving?
I believe love. I believe as long as it's love in the house. And it cannot be love in the house if it's one adult in the house. It has to be two adults in the house to be able to show the children what love looks like.
Okay.
I agree. I believe that as long as you got love, like I said, as an educator and a therapist, I done seen kids that crazy and getting mom and dad now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, where you at? Oh,
yeah.
He at my home.
No, let him go. Let him.
You know, so I've seen that. So, and just, you know, before we get a chance, like, I got a book coming out, The 5 Pillars of Leadership for Black Boys, Caring God. So just, it'll be out end of the month, and it'll be on my website, www.thecameron.info.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. All right.
My parting statement is...
So we're going to bring...
Yes.
So this is the guy was supposed to be our guest.
Our MC.
We called him. Phone went straight to voicemail. Nah, come on back over here. I text you and stuff. You ain't going to be in the frame over there. You got to come over here.
You can be parked right there.
Nah, this was your podcast. Come on over here. We at the end now. We want to give you some love. Now come here, because in my eyes, and I'm going to introduce you. I'm going to let you go ahead and wrap it up. So, you know, good brother here is one of the members of the lounge. And last week, I said, I need a podcast subject. And I said, what are you passionate about, knowing a little bit about? I swore he was going to say something about sports. And he did. He hit me with the curveball. And he said, nah, man, men raising men. Yeah, he threw the change up. I think we'll say basketball. Yeah. I said, what are you passionate about?
What are you passionate about?
And so he was like, man, men raising men.
Men raising men. He said, you know, they
got fucked up old heads. Y'all heard me say that earlier. Mm-hmm. That was his words, not mine. But, you know, one thing I could say about this gentleman here is that, he's here. He's a kind soul. I hold him in high regard, and there's not a lot of people I hold him in high regard. I'm just saying, I don't hold a lot of people in high regard, but I hold this guy to my left in high regard.
We hold him in high regard.
You know what I mean? And so tell him who you are. And the reason why it was mentioned, because I know you from here, but I know a little bit about your history, and I know what you do with the kids and all that stuff. So tell him at least who you are, man.
I'm Chris Laws. First of all, I don't know what else.
You're a father, right? How many boys you got?
I got two sons. Mm-hmm. Two sons, but then I got two women, so to speak. I'm a school teacher, 22 years, so I got many kids.
Mm-hmm.
A basketball coach, so I got even more kids.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a football coach at times, so I got even more kids. You know, I coach golf, volleyball. Whatever it is, whatever it's called on for me to do, I go ahead and do it. I do a lot of things, but I don't look for any praise or any postings. I don't have to, you know, tell people all the things that, you know, I have done. You know, it's from the heart.
That's right.
You know, so the reason for the podcast was, you know, when you think about our society and how easy it actually is to be bad, and me dealing in the school. A lot of the youngsters, man, they just wanted to be loved, you know? They just want good guidance.
There's that word.
And
good guidance, you're right.
And they're not getting it. And the conversation we talked about is age doesn't equal maturity. You know, you can be 55 and still be immature. You know, and you know, you kind of got to grow into maturity. People don't understand that. You can have a young guy who's wise. It can be more mature than some of the older guys that you see out here. And I call it the old soul, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a strong need for some good old heads. You know what I mean? And for somebody to step up. And it's not going to take one person. One person can't do it by himself. You know, it's going to take more than that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Even if, you know, you can go out there and you get three guys. You know what I'm saying? And you can really, you know,
make the difference
and tell them what they need to hear the right mm-hmm. way. You know, teach them about the struggle. Nobody don't want the struggle. You know,
my man.
And the struggle is what we're missing. Everybody wants the microwave dinner.
Yep.
They don't want to cook it from scratch. You know, the struggle it makes a man.
Yep.
You know, the struggle builds character. The struggle it worked for us. You know, we got our butts whooped back in the day.
Yes.
You know
true
what I'm
story,
saying?
Yep.
At the
true
struggle and it's missing. It's absence of, you know. Even when you look on social media, you see people, they don't even fight, you know. They get punched in their mouth and then they go grab their guns. Yeah. You don't want the struggle. So, you know, we need it. You know, we just need your help, man.
What do you think the solution is? You missed all the problems. We bandied about systematic versus personal responsibility, and we know the data says we're at a much higher frequency in prisons and underemployed or unemployed and you know, mm-hmm. out of wedlock families, single parent households and mm-hmm. stuff like that. What do you think? And it's multifaceted, we understand that.
Yeah.
But since you're coming in at the last minute,
yeah.
you know, what does Mr. Laws think is one of the solutions to righting this ship?
Promptness.
Being on time.
Being on time. That's the
thing. Hey, man.
We brought you out of here.
I was coaching. I was walking in. Was golfing.
I knew you was golfing.
There you go.
I knew you was golfing.
So you know and
allegedly golfing.
Yeah, nah, I put a clip up there of me swinging real bad. But you know what, man? I guess this is gonna catch you off guard. But you know, we're too prideful. You know, the human being don't want to be humble.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? And you know, everything you got to do this, you got to do that. You know, it's never a thing. You know, it's never. You know, putting your head down, being grateful, you know, for the things that you have. You know, it's always more. We live in a greed state. The greed state. It's even if, you know, you make a goal and you're comfortable with it, you know, I want more. You know, this isn't good enough. And, you know, striving to keep gaining more and more and more, you know, you don't appreciate the things that you have. It kind of turns you into a monster. You know, for a person who doesn't appreciate, you know, what you have, you know, it just changes your mood. Your mood's always somebody owes you something. And, you know, I remember at a young age, you know, my mom told me, you know, when I was a teenager, she said, you know, you need to understand this. The world don't love you, and nobody don't owe you anything. You know what I mean? And when you leave out this door, you know that. You know, there's going to be some ups and downs, and be grateful for all your ups and for any kind of encounters that you have, because if you have an encounter and it's a good encounter, that's good. But if it's not a good encounter, then you gain some wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So we gotta entertain our mind. Old heads gotta be old heads, man. You know, we gotta do our part.
Sound good.
All right, man. See, you should have been here earlier. Yep. You could have took all the stuff out I said and inserted your stuff.
Oh,
and it would have been a much better podcast.
Yep.
You know what I mean? But
don't worry, we'll do a part two.
Yeah, because it was a lot.
Not on the Tuesday.
We start talking about accountability.
Yeah.
Black men
and
being accountable.
Yeah.
But I want to thank everybody for tuning in, and I'm gonna go ahead and let you guys give me a 60-second close out, man.
Do another one?
No, not you.
No, yeah.
Not you.
Yeah. You guys do it.
Give me a 60-second close, man. Solutions.
To our black men, we gotta step up and be men. We gotta put our issues back behind us, forgive ourselves, and grab our sons.
Mm. Yeah.
black men, love and accountability. We have to be accountable. Of course, the sacrifice comes first, but we have to be accountable for our rights and our wrongs. When you become accountable, you decide to be a better person the next day, and the next day, that energy will transform into your kids. Be accountable.
All right. Well, I want to thank you guys. I'll just, you know, I said what I said, which is it starts at home. If we if we got a good base, if a loving parents are in the household, the kids, the data says, men lie, women lie, numbers don't.
That's right.
The numbers say a child has a better opportunity for success if they come from a two-parent household.
True story,
so
yep.
So it starts at the house, it starts from the cradle, and, you know, if you don't want to be... I'm not going to get on soapbox because he just said be humble. It starts at home.
Yep.
So I want to thank you guys.
Yeah.
I want to thank you all for tuning in.
Okay.
Thanks, everybody, for your comments. Loretta and Ms. Jackson and everybody else.
Thank you.
We appreciate y'all. And if no one tells you they love you today, tell your goddamn self it means so much more.
Yes.
Peace.
Yes.